This is Srinivas Rao, the host of the Vistage podcast series. Today, I'm speaking with Rita McGrath. Rita, a professor at Columbia Business School in New York, is one of the world's leading experts on strategy in highly uncertain and volatile environments. She works with Global 1000 icons and smaller but fast-growing organizations. Some current clients include F-Secure, Nokia, Microsoft, AXA Equitable, General Electric, Novartis, PPG Industries, the Stena Group, and the World Economic Forum. She's a popular speaker and consults to senior leadership teams. Rita, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today and share some of your insights with our Vistage listeners.
Well, it's a pleasure.
So I'd like to ask you my very first question, which is, let's start by defining what you mean by discovery-driven growth.
Discovery-driven growth is an approach to developing your future businesses that recognizes that you have to do that under highly uncertain environments. Most companies are pretty comfortable doing what they've done all along. The dilemma is that competitive advantages today are getting much shorter than they used to be, and often the most dangerous competition is coming from places you didn't expect, you know, other industries or new technologies. So to the extent that you think strategically, you need to be also thinking about discovering as much as you think about analyzing and testing from the past. So it's really a mindset about the future.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. What can companies start doing to adopt that mindset about the future from a tactical perspective?
Well, where I always recommend people begin is with their own leadership agenda. So the way that works is, I get calls from companies all the time. We're really struggling with growth and innovation is really hard. And can you come help us? So before I go to meet with them, I'll get a copy of their most recent senior leadership agenda. You know, the meetings when important people get together to talk about important stuff. And I'll kind of go through that. And if innovation and growth and new business development are, way down on the list, right next to material safety data sheet update, you've got a problem because people aren't paying attention. So I think the first and easiest thing to start doing is put it in position 1, 2, or 3 on every meeting agenda, even if you only spend 2 seconds on it, and just say, well, with innovation, just wanted you to know the XYZ project has hit a new milestone, something like that. Because if you don't have it right up there on your agenda, it's pretty clear to the organization that the leadership doesn't care about it. And if the leadership doesn't care about it, nobody else is going to care about it. So that's where I would start. Mm-hmm. I think the second thing to start thinking about is making innovation more systematic. And it's always amazing to me that, if people try to do anything important as a corporation, so you want to put in Six Sigma or you want to do lean manufacturing or whatever it is, they go out and find the experts and they find the books and they build the toolkit and then they do it. Somehow, when it comes to innovation, they seem to think, get a bunch of guys and put them in, overalls and painter pants and put them in a room with blank sheets of paper and say, go, be creative. And they sort of reinvent everything from scratch. So I think the next thing I would recommend is build your toolkit. Build the toolkit that's right for your company and think about making innovation really systematic. Don't just tackle pieces of it. You need to have a whole system for conceiving ideas, vetting them, scaling them, and then introducing them to your core business in such a way that they support your core business.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's interesting that you bring up the whole idea of putting people in painter pants or overalls and throwing them in a room. And I've always said it's interesting how we try to infuse creativity in an organization. And if you read any book on creativity, it never says sit in a room for 8 to 10 hours a day and you'll come up with brilliant insights. In fact, some of our most brilliant insights seem to come from really unusual moments when we're not doing anything related to the activity that we're trying to generate insights about.
Yeah, exactly. And my colleague Bill Duggan has written a fascinating book about this. He calls it Strategic Intuition. Mm-hmm. And he talks about this moment when all the different sort of pieces in your head kind of come together in this act of creativity. And I'm actually working on a project looking at this. The scientific name for it is a process called abduction, where you kind of put together pieces of elements that were never together before and form something completely new from them.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that your background says is that you work in highly uncertain and volatile environments or organizations that are in those kinds of phases. But I'm curious, when is discovery-driven growth appropriate for an organization? Is it only appropriate during uncertain or volatile times, or is it always appropriate?
Well, there are always going to be parts of your business where it's appropriate, because if you think about your competitive advantages, as competitors catch up, as markets change, they're always going to need to be renewed and made fresh. I think the urgency gets more extreme when the environment does get more volatile.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk about the 5 practices of discovery-driven growth that you have mentioned throughout your work?
Sure. The first is really being very clear on what your goals are. And that requires at an organizational level, looking at your portfolio of activities and asking the question, is this going to deliver the results that we need? And very often when I do that exercise with companies, what you'll find is there's a real growth gap. So you've got so much that's going to come from, you know, growth of your underlying business. You've got so much that's going to come from maybe acquisitions. You've got so much that's going to come from some other invention or source. And then there's usually a big gap between what all that stuff is going to do for you and where you really want to be in the future. So I think step one is really figuring out how much growth you need and where it needs to come from. The next step is to try to be realistic. So you want to be aware that you're always in competitive markets and you're never going to beat competitors on every single dimension of everything you're doing. So it's a little bit of benchmarking, a little bit of asking, are we being realistic when it comes to the market we're trying to tap into or the competitors we're trying to beat out? Third, you want to be thinking operationally. And this is where a lot of other sensible companies just completely mess up. They don't really think through what it's going to take to make this business happen at a very granular level. You know, like how many sales calls do I have to make? How much manufacturing capacity do I have to have? How many people do I have to train? And as they're doing that, they're going to be making assumptions. So a huge part of this mindset has to do with being very conscious of the assumptions you're making, documenting them, and then going out and testing them. And what you want to be doing is converting those assumptions to knowledge at the lowest possible cost that you can. And then the last piece, which is the most important, is planning to the next checkpoint at which you're going to learn a great deal. And this is a big difference between a discovery-driven approach to things and the more conventional analytical approach, because what you're trying to do is say, we recognize it's uncertain. We know it's volatile. So we can't really think more than about 2 months out. So let's plan with huge detail to 2 months and then stop and see what we learn. And maybe we learn that we should change direction. Maybe we learn that we need to shift our definition of the market somewhat. Maybe we learn we need to do something different. And so the whole discovery-driven idea is to allow your systems and structures to respond to that new information you're learning without it being seen as a failure or without it being seen as, you know, no red-blooded man should do this, that kind of thing. So it's innovation and discovery-friendly.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting you bring up the whole idea of basically looking at things that might not work and treating them sort of as experiments. And this is something you hear about in terms of innovation at some of our most innovative companies that we hear about, like the Apples of the world, the Pixars of the world. They go through this sort of innovative and iterative process. And nobody really plans to do something years out, especially because we are in this environment in which things are changing so quickly now.
Now, I would want to be a little more subtle about that. I think what my research suggests is you've got these two things going on at the same time. The first is you really need people in the organization at a strategic level thinking long term. So, you know, you need to be thinking about 5 years from now, what's the cloud going to mean to our company? Or 5 years from now, what's the advent of, you know, advanced storage going to mean? Or cybercrime? Or, you know, whatever your particular 10 or 12 big kind of trends that you're looking at. So you really want someone thinking very long term and very strategically about those things so that they're alert to them. And then at the same time, you need the organization to be very quick and adaptive in the moment. So you've got to be managing those two time cycles at the same time. Very interesting research I just finished last year looked at a very small group of firms that had been able to drive top line or bottom line growth for 10 years in a row. And one of the things we noticed about them was they have this combination of incredible stability. So stability in their strategy, in their leadership, in the way that they treat talent, and at the same time, incredible dynamism. You know, they're in and out of markets, they're moving people around, they shift their resources very quickly. And I think that's going to be the watchword for the successful companies of the future. So it's not that the need to think long term has gone away. I think people still need to be super aware of that. But this notion that I'm going to be able to have a pie chart with my 5-year strategy on it, I think that's kind of gone away.
Mm-hmm. So one final question for you. Where do people and organizations go wrong with their planning and their growth?
Oh, boy. I actually have a webinar on that very topic. I'll boil it down to 5 things that I think are very common. The first is this problem of episodic innovation. So people say, we got to have growth around here. And, you know, they get the small group together and they go off. And, you know, this goes on for 4, 5, 6 years. And then leadership changes and strategy changes or something shifts. And the group gets disbanded only to sort of reform themselves again, a couple of years later. So you have this problem of episodic innovation. That's a real issue. The second issue issue has to do with lack of diversity in mindset. So you get people that don't really represent the customer, or you get people that are just focused on, say, a technology or something. They don't really think of what needs to happen with respect to the customer. The third thing is you have the problem of what I'll call resources held hostage. So you get the resources that could go into innovation trapped inside an existing business. Like, take Sony, for example. You know, there are frequent references to the Civil War inside Sony because the different divisions hang on to their resources and they don't cooperate to get something to market that everybody could be proud of. A fourth thing is this whole problem of assumptions, that you find people treating assumptions as fact, and that's very dangerous. And then I think the last one is this issue of failure. You don't permit what I'll call intelligent failures. And if you don't have that, you're not going to learn anything. So those are some classic problems I see with the innovation process.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rita, thanks so much for taking some time to join us and share your insights with our listeners. Can you tell us a little bit more about where they can find out more about your work?
Certainly. I have a website. It's ritamagrath.com. That's pretty easy. And I also blog on the hbr.org site. So those are two good places to start. If you do go to my website, there's lots of downloadable materials. You can subscribe to my blog. I've got a subscribe here button. And I don't send out a ton of podcasts, but I send out messages. I send out a few. I'm also on Twitter at rgmagrath. Uh-huh. So that's another good way to keep on track of what I'm doing.
Well, this has been Srinivas Rao, the host of the Vistage podcast series. And until next time, good luck with your business.